And you tease a messenger, teaching the youth about roots and culture. And tell them I see them to remember Jah. That's all I need when I am. CKUT is a messenger, teaching the youth about roots and culture. And tell them I see them to remember Jah. That's all I need when I am. 90.3 FM. It's CKUT, the cultural radio station. Radio McGill. Blessed love. The messenger. Take it away.
JF Ayah, who is runs curator and host of the Facebook page Montreal Poster Archive, an incredible archive of posters dating back maybe 100 years?
A little more, but 100 years is fair to say, yes.
So thanks for joining us. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So my name is Jeff. I've worked in the music business for almost 20 years. I started working in record stores back in the 90s. I've worked at Cédéma, Sam the Record Man, Beatnik. I opened a record store in Paris also, worked in Lyon, France. I thought I would be opening my own store one day, but you know, plans changed. I was a music programmer for TouchTunes, a licensing agent for Sodrak. I did the live concert videos and photography. I'm currently also the social media manager for the Upstairs Jazz Bar and Grill. And I am the curator of the Montreal Concert Poster page, where I archive concert posters from today all the way back to mostly the early 1900s. And I include in my publications the biography of the venues. And so far, I have in my archive 25,000 images, and just it keeps growing day by day. And there is no end in sight.
What about... So there's every genre, right?
Yeah.
Do you go to like outside of Montreal at all, or is it
no.
just
no? Well, yes, but however, we're maybe South Shore, North Shore, Repentigny, Sainte-Thérèse kind of thing.
Okay.
But I don't really. Yeah, but I don't touch Quebec City, for example. Sometimes they send me stuff, people from Quebec City. I'm like,
they have shows in Quebec City.
You know, it's called Montreal Concert Poster Archive, so I'm thinking if someone wants to do Quebec City Concert Poster Archive, you know, go ahead. I'm from Montreal, and Montreal is the territory I want to specialize in.
Is there like any genre that you feel is low in your collection that you like mm-hmm. reach out and build up?
Yes. Sometimes I make posts about that. I would like to find more flyers from the Purple A's, for example, mm-hmm. the smaller bars, the Woodstock. Some other bars were just open like for a year, the Voltaire, or even hip hop shows. There's not that many flyers I find that they're not easily searchable.
Yeah.
They're not coming to me, so I publish what I can. But when I publish, I try to keep every post different, not always from the same era. So I just, it's like the press is right, the wheel, like, I go on my Flickr and go, okay, oh yeah, that's interesting, you know, I'll go with this. It's different from the previous post. It's usually a concert, a ticket, a newspaper article post. I try to keep it original, because I do publish a lot currently, maybe 10 posts per day, it's a bit much. But that's because I'm on paternity leave currently. Mm. It will change next week. I won't have as much time. But there is so much stuff to share. I mean, I have 25,000 images on my computer, but on Facebook, I'm only at 10,000. So it's like I have a backlog of 15,000 images to choose from at any point. And I keep finding stuff every day. But currently, I'm trying to write as much as possible about cabarets that you cannot find any information elsewhere.
Is there a definition of cabaret? Like, is it a specific type of venue, or is it just like a broad overarching term that kind of applies to a lot of show spaces?
Yeah, well, it's they would define it as a cafe, which is a venue that offers a supper concert experience. Mm-hmm. It's a place where you go, you have dinner, you can dance, and there's also an orchestra playing. And usually there's two orchestras, one major orchestra doing the big concert, supporting American, Sam Cooke, for example, dropping, and here's the orchestra with him, which is local. And then there's a smaller trio for dancing later on. Usually they have two. And Montreal's been trying a lot to replicate what they had in Paris, because a lot of cabarets in Montreal, they had the same name as the famous cabaret in Paris, like Café Montmartre, yeah. Cabaret Lido, Monte Carlo, Mocambo, even copying the States, United States formula.
Yeah.
So what eras would this be? Like, when did
the cabarets? Mostly the 30s and 40s, that's like the golden age of Montreal cabaret. In the 20s, they existed, but they were more of a dancing kind of place. There mm-hmm. were not really concerts. People went to go to dance.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 30s, that's really when it started to pick up. And then in the 50s, it started to slow down a bit, especially when television appeared. People were just no longer going out. However, that's when a new market emerged, rock and roll, and the kids started listening to rock and roll. And the Esquire, you know, they're like the first place to play live rock and roll in Montreal. You know, so
mm-hmm.
I'm always trying to promote the Esquire.
What about the disco era?
Disco?
Are you collecting stuff that doesn't involve live music?
Not live music? No. No.
But like a DJ.
So the Limelight, for example.
Okay.
Well, the Limelight.
Yes.
They're both.
Yeah, Limelight. If I can find any posters from the Limelight, yes,
mm-hmm.
absolutely. As long as there was a performance.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be a rock band, but as long as there was a performance.
Right.
Because the newspaper articles I collect are from performances. That's like, how was it? I don't really care if the article says this guy's coming tomorrow. We'll see how it goes. I want to know the next day, how was it? That's important. That's what's interesting to me.
Yeah, the stories.
Yes.
Because like in the case of Chet Baker, who knows if they're actually going to walk on stage or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe you could talk a bit about, because I think this part got missed, just about your sources and your research, how you find these things.
Yeah.
And try and mention too what you were talking about with regards to obituaries, because I found that really interesting.
Right.
But, yeah, just sources in general.
So my sources, I have my own personal concert collection at home. I have probably like 50 posters, maybe a little more. I have lots of ticket stubs, kind of backstage passes and that kind of stuff. And then my friends were also in part of the scene. I'm asking them, do you have stuff you'd like to share? So people have been sending me their concert memorabilia. And then it will be newspaper articles like the Gazette, Montreal Daily Star, La Presse, Radio Monde, all newspapers that are searchable through BANQ. I make sure that when I do share stuff from any source, that I do include the source in my publication. I don't want any copyright infringement problems, of course. And it is a non-lucrative activity, so it's just a historical page. So, you know, I think I'm doing good with that. And what would be another source? It's mostly newspaper articles, really, or other websites.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's websites who are specialize in heavy metal.
Yeah.
They have all the
like for fun. I used to have them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or also even on Facebook, there's plenty of Facebook events that were created. Or you just go on Eventco or Greenland or Extensive Enterprise or the venue itself. You just go into their concert history and they're all there. Yeah, those are mainly the sources.
Talk about obituaries.
The obituaries, yes. Sometimes I cannot find any information on a certain club. However, I might be able to find the name of the owner. If you go on Gazette Officielle du Québec, it shows all the incorporations of the businesses. So you write the name of the venue. If you're lucky, you'll find your incorporation with the name of all the owners. And then I just search the name of the owner. And sometimes I will find information in the obituaries.
Yeah.
Like, for example, Mervyn Dash was the owner of Arlen Paradise, which used to be called Café Saint-Michel. Café Saint-Michel was a very important jazz club in Montreal in the 40s. That's where bebop originated in Montreal. And it turned into Arlen Paradise. Mervyn Dash was the founder. I could not find anything on him except in his obituary. You had, how he started, the other clubs he owned, what else he did after he closed Arlen Paradise, that sort of thing. It's funny, you wouldn't think you'd find information like that, but, you know, it's Norman Silver from the Esquire and the Gazette. There's a lot of information about him when he passed away, because the journalists, they want to go over their life, of course.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll find it on very independent blogs. You'll find a bit of information there.
We should do venue obituaries.
Yeah. I try to be very precise with my publications. I want the exact date of opening, the exact date when it closed, and the name of the owner mostly. And then in between, it's what happened there. Why is this place important? Why are they important? And was it called another venue before? And did it became another venue after? I find those are the information that for me are of interest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Speaking of the clubs, because one thing that we run into as archivists is a problem where some addresses don't exist anymore because the buildings aren't there.
Right.
So the addresses just aren't the same. You can't even look at them on Google Maps, for example.
Yeah.
That's why there's a shift in archiving towards actually using the coordinates.
Yes.
If you can identify those.
Yes, the streets were re-numerized like in 1928, 1930. Some addresses, they completely became other addresses. I've been able to make the connection because sometimes one venue is advertised at a certain address 1 year, the next year it's a different address. So I'm like, oh, okay, these are, that's how they connect.
And you know that the bar didn't just move. It does happen sometimes.
Maybe, well, usually there will be an article in the Gazette, a little column, if they did move, like the Samovar, where Carlos and Pepe's is in front of Como Royale. Well, that's building super important cabaret history there, on all floors. It burned down several times. Where the parking lot is, used to be a cabaret there too.
Mm-hmm.
And the Samovar, they moved upstairs, and that, you can read it in a newspaper or in interviews. I haven't seen it that much. They have moved, but you can find that information. I haven't been it hasn't confused me, is what I mean to say, that much so far. Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting how much corruption there was too. I don't know all that much story. I want, it's interesting,
yeah.
That's part, but I don't go too much into it.
Mm.
I guess I don't want to be, I don't look for trouble. I just try to, you know, stick to the
Do you ever
facts.
Do a call out on the Facebook page asking for anything that you're seeking in
yeah.
particular?
Yeah, yeah, I've been asking for, flyers from Purple A's or Woodstock,
mm.
or if you have concert stubs you want to share with us.
And
yeah, not that much, but maybe there'll be one response.
Right.
But that person might send me a bunch of stuff.
Right.
There's this girl who, she's, you know, her time period is from the 80s, obviously. She's sending me a bunch of hardcore punk shows. I'm like, wow, this is like gold.
Yeah, I've seen some of that. It is
yeah.
amazing.
It's like, oh, and she lived above a blacklight on Saint Laurent.
Mm-hmm.
You know where the blacklight was? Corner Saint Catherine and Saint Laurent.
Yeah.
There's La Belle Province.
Yeah.
Like right behind, there's a strip club on
yeah.
top of a Surplus Army.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
that place, super
oh, yeah.
important. Yeah, yeah, that place. Was
wow.
the first major...
Is there still a club there?
Yeah, it's a strip club.
Okay.
Yeah, that club in the 30s was called the Frolics. That was the first major club in Montreal, on Saint Laurent Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned into Café Connie's Inn, Café Val d'Or, which was the first attempt at a French cabaret. Because back in those days, everything was English, really. Even if the singers,
oh
yeah, yeah, yeah. Even if the singers were singing French, it was all advertised in English. It was tough. And then it turned into Fait le Faisan Doré. And that was the first French cabaret in Montreal. Charles Aznavour sang there. Yeah. And then it turned into the Montmartre. And that lasted like 20 years. And then I don't know, it was like a huge. Gap where there was nothing, and then the black light was there.
Mm-hmm.
They had the Agnostic Front there and a bunch of hardcore punk shows.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that building was super important Montreal history there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking I should write like a book like this is, so people just go walk around town with this place.
Book.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. That would be an interesting idea.
No, but we've often talked like the history of a building is really
yes,
fascinating,
yes.
especially a venue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like the Sala Rosa has a really interesting
story. Yeah, 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 right. Yeah, I love it. I'm a friend of Craig Morrison, maybe you know
mm-hmm.
the teacher, music historian.
Yeah.
And I've always liked Craig, how he explains things. He'll make you listen to a song, but he'll put it in context first
mm-hmm.
before pressing play. And you're like, whoa, this is going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of like trying to replicate that too. Now, here's the poster. And if you read the text, you'll be your mind's gonna be blown
mm-hmm.
away. You know? Try to do that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, when did you first like? What date was the first post on
the first
show?
Post? I think it was in May of last year.
Yeah. So it's
really from I guess altruistic. I think it's
mm-hmm.
the word. It's really just to give to the community because I feel. It's important. For me, history is important, music is important,
mm-hmm.
and I feel the whole culture gains when people are interested in music, they know more about the history of where they come from, the
mm-hmm.
culture. And I thought Montreal was cool, and after doing all this research, I realized it's even way cooler than
mm-hmm.
I thought.
Have you lived in Montreal all your life?
Yes, yes. I was born in Montreal
yeah.
in 76. Proud to be living in Montreal. I work at Villarreal now. I worked here on St. Catherine, Cédéma. Used to be across
yeah.
from Sam the Record Man. I worked at Sam the Record Man. I worked at Beatnik for
yeah.
many years. And then I was a music programmer for Touch Tunes, a jukebox company.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Then I worked at licensing at Sodrak. And then, I did music videos also.
Mm-hmm.
I did live music videos for Simple Plan, Vulgar Machin, Marie-Pierre Arthur. I did a lot of photography also. But this was around 2015. It was getting tough trying to live off videos,
right.
A full-time career, and still do music on the side. And it doesn't feel that different to me, except I'm busy all the time. All the time I'm busy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good. Like tonight I'm going to upstairs, the jazz bar. They have jam sessions there, and they're restarting their jam sessions after 2 years of closure.
Mm-hmm.
And the jam sessions are very important to me. I'm getting off topic here, but it's important for me to help the musicians in Montreal. Now I'm involved with the jazz community. Before it was the punk community. I used to do a punk video magazine in the 90s called Punk Empire. We were interviewing bands and doing it on VHS. This was before Music Plus had their show on 2-3 Punk. I was pissed. I was like, why there's no punk shows at Music Plus? Fuck this. So me and my friends, I was living next to Paget, so I had access to all the shows,
mm-hmm.
and the bands. So we interviewed all our favorite bands, put this on VHS, sold the tapes for $5.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like a video fan.
Out of the back of the car kind of thing?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Huh.
And this project is kind of like another
extension.
Yeah, of that, I find, you know. Except it goes way into the past as much
mm-hmm.
as possible. But it doesn't feel that old to me, because my wife, she's a historian from, she specializes in the 18th century Enlightenment. So my knowledge of history also has grown in the last 2 or 3 years. So when we talk about shows from the 60s, it doesn't feel that old to me.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, the 80s, that's such a long time ago, but I like to go deep as far
right,
as possible.
Right. Well, I've definitely seen it in
yeah.
your collection,
mm-hmm.
and super exciting. So what was I gonna ask now? What kind of feedback have you been getting? What are people using it for? Is
right.
it just...
Yes. So some people, they reshare. I can tell from the sharing and
mm-hmm.
that people are resharing. Some people, they write sometimes, in my inbox, amazing page. I really support what you're doing. I also have some flyers I want to send you,
mm-hmm.
or ticket stubs I'm going to send you. It's always been positive. And one thing I'm really proud about is that on that page, I have not seen one negative comment in a whole year.
Mm-hmm.
No one's been fighting or arguing against
mm-hmm.
each other.
Uh-huh.
It's all been positive. I'm like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I find that special, especially in this day and age where things are so negative on Facebook. And even myself, I've thought about leaving or quitting Facebook
yeah.
because of the negativity. But then I look at my page or other pages that are similar, or vinyl collector pages, and I can see why most of us are addicted. There's a good community online, and we don't want to quit because it's fun. You learn from people's posts. And my angle is really from a music history angle.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to learn, what was the Esquire Show Bar? You know, why
mm-hmm.
was it important? Or the Rockets Paradise, Harlem Paradise, or the Black Bottom, the important
mm-hmm.
jazz clubs.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important. I'm surprised that most of them, they're not even on Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what? I guess I'm gonna have to go and create a Wikipedia page, you know.
And where was the Esquire?
The Esquire was on Stanley.
Okay.
It was on second floor on Stanley, and I think it's 1224. It was below south of St. Catherine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I'm impressed with the history of Montreal. One club used to be another club before, and an important club. Some clubs, they had like three major cabarets in their history. Mm-hmm. I find that so fascinating, mm-hmm. you know. Like the Esquire used to be Villa Maurice from Phil Maurice, who opened Chez Maurice, was a major cabaret in Montreal, you know, in the 30s and 40s. And the Esquire, after it became the My Lord, and Offenbach was the first band that played there. There's just so much.
But isn't that just being rebought? Like
sometimes.
The medley, you know,
yeah.
like those spaces
yeah.
were. Maybe the Bell Center has like
yes.
changed its name.
Yes.
So like, actually, in your collection,
yeah.
Is there like the perimeter of, like, would you be collecting all the flyers from the posters from the Bell Center, or is it
yeah.
like no,
yeah,
not
yeah.
interested?
Oh
yeah,
sure, sure, yeah, yeah.
So you got
yeah.
it. Like,
yeah, well, those from the Bell Center, I take them from the BONQ
mm-hmm.
or La Presse or the Gazette even. But I find online in some newspapers, there's like a whole, like because the Mirror was so happening in
right.
the 90s, I find that in the Gazette from the 90s, there's not as much good stuff to find. Because
mm-hmm.
I've been through the Gazette. Like every page for like 100 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been through almost everything. My wife keeps saying, are you done soon? You know, well, kind of, but I keep going, you know. There's always something I didn't find out or, oh, look at this. Because I also want to find all the posters from the first day of the opening.
Let's
say the Esquire opened in March 3rd, 1940. Well, I need the poster from
mm-hmm.
the first night. I try to get all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I get upset when I can't find some information. But and I find that some encyclopedias are not always accurate, because I find stuff that contradicts what's in the encyclopedia. I'm surprised about that. So I'm like, Or even musicians, they're being interviewed, but sometimes maybe their memory is not exactly accurate.
Yeah.
Okay. You sure it's 62? I think it's 61, yeah? But I don't want to get that upset. But, yeah. It feels like, I guess, a master's study, kind of. That's what my wife says. You're kind of doing like a master's study.
Of all the concerts that have ever happened in the city
yeah.
of Montreal.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
just trying to see the expense
yeah.
of it.
Well, I like the stories.
Yeah.
There's so many interesting stories. The Edith Piaf story at the Wonder Bar, that was interesting. Have you heard that story?
No.
Edith Piaf, she was playing at this cabaret called the Wonder Bar. It used to be Chez Maurice, and that is the upper floor of Urban Outfitters today.
Okay.
So Edith Piaf was playing there. It was her second time in Montreal. It was very popular. So the owners, they had to put extra people at the door because they had to make sure there was people, everybody had reservations. So there's a guy who walks in. Yes, do you have a reservation for Monsieur Le Maire? So the guys, they look at the list and no Monsieur Le Maire, sorry. So the guy walks out, comes back 5 minutes later. He's like, are you sure you want to turn away the mayor of Montreal? It was Camillien Houd, the mayor of Montreal, you know, trying to sneak in because he didn't have any tickets to see the Piaf. But the show was sold out, so the owner, he couldn't seat him anywhere. He took Camillien Houd, he sat him at the first table at the front with two of the biggest gamblers in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently he had a good night because he gave a $10 tip to the chef, Camille. So that was interesting. Those are the kind of stories
mm-hmm.
I'm looking for.
Wow.
Or the Chet Baker story in Théâtre Saint-Denis in 86. It's a kind of short story. I'll try to make it quick. So Chet Baker was supposed to play Théâtre Saint-Denis in the Jazz Fest. Because he was flying in from Europe, he was supposed to be in Montreal like the day before. So André Ménard, the organizer, he asks Paul Blais, the pianist, who's supposed to play with Chet Baker. Paul Blais from Montreal. Have you heard of Chet Baker? No? Do you have a contact I can call in Paris? Yeah, I have a friend who knows Chet in Paris. So they call the friend. Is Chet Baker there? No, Chet Baker, he lives in Belgium now. It's like, what? Yeah, he lives in a pharmacy. What? In a pharmacy? Okay, they have the phone number. So they call the pharmacy in Belgium. And the guy picks up, yeah, do you have a Chet Baker here? I was like, yes, he's here. Okay, well, he needs to be on a train to Paris. He needs to catch a flight to Montreal. He's playing tonight. This was like at midnight, the day before the show. So it was 6 a.m. in Paris. You know? André Ménard, he hires a journalist in Paris to make sure that Chet Baker gets on the train and goes to the airport, lands in Montreal. Chet Baker lands in Montreal. All he has is a brown paper bag with pills and his trumpet and no case. Wow. That's all he has.
What year is this?
86, Théâtre Saint-Denis. And by the time he gets on stage at Saint-Denis, he's completely stoned out of his mind. He can't even play his trumpet. And the show turned into more of a Paul Blais concert than a Chet Baker concert. People asked for refunds. And the same night, he was at the hotel lobby at 3 in the morning. He wanted to jam with the hotel musicians. And André Ménard, he said, if you go on stage, you know, you're dead meat. It's over for you, you know? And I don't know the rest of the story, but I guess he did jam with the hotel musicians. And, you know, the rest is a history.
So how'd you find out that story?
It was written in the Gazette.
Okay.
André Ménard was explaining the story himself. But, but sometimes the stories are in English. I have to translate them to French. But those are the kind of things that I find are interesting, entertaining. People, when they hear them, like, what? That's crazy. You have any more stories like that? Yeah, here's another one. So,
do you have any interest in things that aren't music? Like posters for
posters that are not music? Yeah.
Boxing matches or?
Yeah, well, I have a couple from Cars.
From
the, Cars, beer commercials, soft drinks, I guess.
Do you know, have you ever heard of Len Donovan?
Yeah,
he used to program here.
He's
also a huge boxing historian. The two scenes of jazz and boxing have always connected.
Yeah, well, I work for Upstairs, and Len Dobbin and the Upstairs are really connected. Joel from Upstairs and Len, they were big, great friends. And Joel, he says sometimes, you're like the next Len kind of thing. And I was like, not quite.
Len wasn't
not quite his level, but
he,
I appreciate it.
That's his business card, right?
Yeah.
But he would tell those stories like he wasn't, I don't think he was a collector of the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was there. Yeah, it's interesting.
He would tell the stories for sure.
I was living in NDG 7 years ago, and Norman Marshall Villeneuve and his wife Louise, they were looking for an apartment. I got him an apartment inside my building, and they learned somehow that they were living inside Len Dobbin's apartment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was like, what? So they've been very appreciative of what I've been doing for them the last years.
So how can people contribute?
They can write to me in my inbox if they want to send me their ticket stubs or their images. Preferably, I tell them, if you want, you can send me an email, because the quality is reduced a little bit.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Yeah. I want to optimize the quality as much as I can. However, most people, they look at this on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
So on Facebook, I try to get the best quality as possible, but I don't mind it if they send it to me and through my inbox. They can send it through Dropbox, any way they want. I'm trying also to be very nice. If people write to me, I want them to feel like they're contributing to something. They're not just like returning a video at Blockbuster,
mm-hmm.
and here's my stuff, you do what you want. I want them to feel like, okay, my stuff is in good hands.
Mm-hmm.
It will be used in a good way. It will be optimized as much as possible. And hopefully this creates more people that want to send stuff over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first poster that you ever collected or brought home or put on your wall?
Yeah, my whole bedroom was older, like this. I guess it was the Bad Religion poster with Green Day and the Seaweed at the Metropolis.
What year was that?
I think this was 93.
Yeah,
93.
Makes sense.
And most of the Pat and Wood posters. I was very big, much into the Fat and Epitaph bands. And I filmed a lot of the bands, almost every Fat band and Epitaph bands that came here. I got them on video. There was a Fat Records documentary. Some of my stuff has been used in documentaries before.
Well, that's what I expect will eventually happen.
I mean,
that's what sort of happened with our audio archive. Once it's available, then you're
thinking
a resource.
Yes, exactly.
Other projects.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm hoping.
Do you want to do an intro?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. I'm trying to think of more stuff.
I have a question.
Gold Stuff Robot Boy! Hello, this is the artist formerly known as Christ from the God of My Voices, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, listener-powered community radio. Don't forget to check out the new Circus Devils album.
Music and anti-fascism. Reflections on the past and possibilities in the present. Join us for a concert July 7th featuring Egyptian Cotton Orchestra, Montreal Free Jazz, Kim Dong Wong, free improv based on Korean traditional music, Skunk Heaven, New York City Noise, on July 7th, 2022, at 9 p.m., La Sala Rosa, 4848 Saint Laurent. For more information on the concert and conference on protest music and anti-fascism, music and antifascism.wordpress.com. This concert, with generous support from Suoni Peri Popolo and Popolo Press. This is a CKUT Radio co-presentation.
Are you ready?
Are you ready for the sound experience of a lifetime? Are you ready for crystal clarity in sonic bliss? Are you ready for CKUT? We're ready for you. 90.3 on your FM dial.
I'm not afraid to That's Maldita, their hardcore punk band from Toronto. I chatted with their vocalist Rosa from The Road. They're on tour right now, and they're going to be in Quebec City on Thursday, June 9th, Sherbrooke, June 10th, and Montreal, June 11th. We chatted about the band, about her influences, about the band's influences, and the importance of being politically active when you're a punk musician.
My name is Rosa, and I'm the singer of Maldita.
Could you tell me how your tour has been so far?
Well, the tour so far, it has been great. Yeah, we started in Toronto, our hometown, and we play with three other bands, Brain Edge, Guts, and More Crimes, that are also in our label. And it went amazing. The reception is always beautiful there, and it was great to see your friends and new faces as well, and seeing the start of the punk scene. There's new faces, young people actually getting into it, and that's always a sigh of relief to see that new blood in the scene.
Hell yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah, and then we moved on to playing an opening for Propagandhi with in London and Guelph. And that also went great. We haven't played to such a big audience in Canada at the moment till then. And it was a great reception. We had a lot of good comments, and we sold a lot of merch, which is always great.
That's cool. Yeah. Congrats on your gigs with Propagandhi. That's every Canadian band's dream. So
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was amazing. And then we went on to play Oshawa, and that went great too. And we move on to the East Coast, that we play in Moncton the Friday after, and we play also Halifax on the Saturday and Fredericton on Sunday, and the three shows were great. The energy was amazing. We sold a lot of merch. We are almost out of t-shirts right now, and we still have three gigs right on Quebec City, Sherbrooke, and Montreal, so we're really looking forward to that.
I understand you're from Peru originally, is that correct?
Yes.
Could you tell me about the Peruvian punk scene?
Well, I mainly grew up mostly in Canada.
Okay.
I moved to Canada when I was 17. So I wasn't exposed so much to the punk scene in Peru, but I got to travel back and I got to know more of the punk scene in Peru and meet great people in Peru and the punk scene. So that was also great. I know there's a really great band right now called Benjamin, and it's my friends that we play with in Punkitude back in 2019 in Mexico. And we right away connected, and, we've been keeping in touch ever since. Also, my friends from DHK, they were supposed to play Varney also before COVID, and they couldn't play because of a visa problem, but I got to hang out with them in Mexico too, and we got to connect, and I got introduced more to the punk scene. And when I went back to visit, I was able to go to some shows in Lima, and that was great. The scene is it's a small community, but it's great.
Obviously, you sing entirely in Spanish.
Yes.
Well, you're not singing, you're yelling. I was very interested listening to the record, because most of the punk and hardcore that you hear, most vocalists are yelling or screaming, but you go for a different approach where the listener can understand exactly what you're saying. Could you tell me a little bit about why you chose to go for that style of vocals?
I feel I felt more comfortable that way. I always listen to a variety of different styles, and just screaming in that way so people can understand me, it was important for me because it also like helped me connect with like my Latin audience here in Canada and like everywhere in South America. And it's just it really wanted to make the messages that I write about come across, and you know, people can really look them up. And that's what I go to the extra step of, like, all the lyrics that I wrote, like, translate them and, like, put them on our record we released recently.
You released your record on Cursed Blessings, which is a record label that I'm not familiar with. Could you tell me about your relationship with them? How did you come to work with them?
I've been a part, all the owner of, like, Cursed Blessings, he's been part of the punk scene for a really long time, Toronto scene. And he just came to the shows, and he really digged the band, and he contacted our bassist player, Steve, and he was really interested in like, putting us on their new record label and helping us out with our second release. So we worked out a deal, and that's where we are now. And they've been really supportive of us and helping us promote as much as we can, and we're really happy with them.
You mentioned your bassist, Stevie. You'll have to tell Stevie from me that I think his bass tone on this record is the perfect bass tone for a punk album. That was the first thing I thought when I listened to it, was just like, oh, like the bass tone is perfect. The drum sound is perfect. It sounds like
that'll be Andy. Andy on the drums too. He played for different bands before, one in Toronto and one in Mexico.
Oh, cool.
And he was able to come with us to Mexico to play Punky Dude as well.
It really sounds like you're playing with people who really understand the nuances of punk and hardcore. Could you tell me how?
Definitely, especially Matt too, our guitar player. He's a veteran of the scene, playing a lot of bands, and he played in other bands like IBNS too.
Could you tell me a little bit about this iteration of the band? Because I know that these are not all original members now.
Yeah, we went through some changes, but it's just it was really organic the way that we just like been in the scene together for so many years, and it was just like hanging out at shows, and then like we need a drummer, or we need a guitar player, and it just happened, and this is like our last formation, and it's just been great. We all get along. We've been having like great time in tour. We have like a good chemistry together on stage, and it's just been it's been a dream tour so far. Yeah.
I'm curious because there's so many different influences that come across your records. You know, like there's even a noisy guitar solo on the record that makes me think of a lot of Japanese hardcore bands. There's just like so
like
many.
Our bass player that also writes, he also writes a lot of the riff. He's heavily influenced by a lot of like the hardcore punk beat from the 80s. Especially, he was listening to a lot of Gosse while writing for this album.
Yeah, it definitely shows. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, they're all giggling in the background right now because it's true.
Could you tell me some of your personal influences? Are there bands or are there vocalists that have really inspired you to go after your specific style?
Well, I really like, I'm a big fan of Wendy Williams, Plasmatics, and like a lot of like female from women and a lot of bands. So I try to emulate that as much as I can. One of my other bigger influences is Janik. In the Montreal scene. He right now plays physics for Fracture, and I just always admire her as like a strong woman and the energy that she presents on stage.
And she played in After the Bombs as well, is that correct?
Yeah, yes.
Yes, exactly. I remember that band from a long time ago. Very cool.
Yeah, oh yeah.
What are you hoping your audience takes away from your music? You know, we were talking about your shows with Propagandhi earlier, and I remember them saying in interviews that a long time ago they had to get used to the idea that people show up to their shows and they are not into the politics. You know, they come for the music, but if anything political comes up, you know, they have fans that don't care. And you're a very political band. How do you, I guess, what do you expect from your audience, or what do you hope your audience takes away from your music?
Well, I hope to at least inspire other women to take onto the stage and take into brighter music and being part of the scene that for so long was like male dominated, and in some ways it was misogynistic and sexist, and just hoping to inspire them to like be strong and get out there and just do their thing.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Any other bands that you've played with on tour that you want to shout out? Has anybody blown you away?
Yeah, like on tour, like so far we played with Brain Ish, Squander were really great too, and Halifax. And Among Dead, I really enjoy this band, Another Dose. And Le Baron, they were great as well. And I'm looking forward to like all the other bands that we're going to play in Quebec too. Some bands that I haven't played with yet, and I'm looking forward to. We're hoping to one day tour Mexico or like South America as well, but we'll have to probably sell more t-shirts for that. but we're planning to hopefully tour outside of Canada again. Like we were supposed to tour Europe in 2019, but 2020, but obviously COVID happened and ruined that plan. But hopefully we can do that at some point in the future, and also do the States as well, because there's like a really big Latin community, especially in California and southern states. So we're hoping to like reach that audience as well.
I know that your record just came out, but I want to ask you about the next one. Have you and your bandmates thought about what the next record is going to sound like, or if there's changes you would like to make, or a shift in style, or anything like that?
I think the next sound is going to be more solid and tight as we are getting more and we're playing more and more. And, yeah, like already our bassist is already writing songs, and it's going to start, as soon as we finish this tour, it's going to start getting together with our guitar player and starting writing some sick riffs. So the next album is going to sound really good too.
Do you know how soon you might start working on new material, or are you going to be playing any unreleased material while on tour?
We're not playing any unreleased material at the moment, but as soon as we get back, we're going to start writing new songs for sure. When we work together, it's like really organic. Like they write all the music, and as soon as I hear like the riffs and the drums put together, like I can just put together an idea and like write the lyrics right on top of it. It's been like magic working with these guys.
I saw that Maldita contributed to the National Bail Fund Network fundraiser back in 2020. And I think this is really important. And, you know, I think bands in the punk and hardcore community, You know, to sing about politics is one thing, but I think bands really need to be active in their community and try to make a difference and volunteer and fundraise. You know, I'm very impressed that you did this, along with multiple other bands. Could you tell me a bit about how this came to be and why it was important to you?
Oh, definitely. It was really important for me as a person that suffered like police abuse. I got my arm broken by the cops back in 2013. And, you know, like any chance that I get to like help out issues like this, I'm right behind it. Like I'm always been a big part of like the community in Toronto. And I volunteer at the food bank there for so many years and organize like feedings at the park for like the traveling punk kids or Twin Hopper kids or like anybody that needed a meal and organize a street hockey, punk hockey in the park. So for me, like all these social causes like mean a lot and something that I always stand behind. So like the rest of the band, of course, like stand behind that as well. And, you know, when whatever we can help, we will try to contribute, you know.